you need to talk technology. No one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
And a very good Tuesday afternoon to you, my friends out there in Radio Land. Adam Lepp here, the Computer Guy. Time to talk today's top and trendy technology topics on The Place for Talk, WWGH Radio. Following Scott Spears, we get together every Tuesday and Thursday right after the 2 p.m. features to go ahead and tickle a brain cell or two, stimulate intellectual conversation, and like many programs on this fine station, invite a little controversy and maybe some additional perspectives. Also note that I am on the air live with you for mid-morning coffee break every Monday between about 10:13 a.m. and 11 to talk politics, current events, and other topics of the day. I am usually joined by our resident presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Fineman, like I was last week, this week, and the week before. He is very generous and taking time out of his schedule to go on the air with me and talk about these current events, presidential history, the election, etc. And he's on with Scott from time to time also. Be sure to visit our website at WWGH1071.com for archives of all my shows. Again, the mid-morning coffee break program, and of course, this one where we talk tech topics. Scott's shows, Glenn, Mike, and all of our other great programs on the station. We'll have some news and views from the world of tech very shortly. Wanted to give you an interesting story that kind of shows the vulnerability of a system where we have a lot of reliance upon the internet, and one piece of the puzzle being broken or being changed can thoroughly disrupt things. Let's go to the New York City metropolitan area, Secaucus, New Jersey. Authorities say two New Jersey boys successfully crashed their high school Wi-Fi network on multiple occasions to get out of taking exams. Tell you, when I was in school, I did some creative things, but of course, they didn't have Wi-Fi networks back there in the Stone Ages, but kind of a cool thought. Of course, it's mischievous and wrong, but it's cool in that delightfully naughty way that we sometimes see. The two Secaucus high school freshmen are charged with computer criminal activity and conspiracy. Authorities say the two 14-year-olds used an app or a computer program to compromise the network and apparently took requests from other students to bring it down. Again, delightfully naughty in one way, but criminal in the other. Kind of up to you to determine how to interpret it. But it does show vulnerability. I will say that much. And again, these are 14-year-old kids. Obviously, they're smart, but maybe they should use their intelligence in a different fashion. Superintendent Jennifer Montesano said the school's Wi-Fi network has been restored and now fully operational, but she declined further comment. She was probably also rather embarrassed that their IT people, adults with a lot of experience in education, didn't set up the network to disallow this kind of modification. That's more than likely what she's embarrassed about, and probably they should hire IT people with better attention to detail, if you like my opinion. Since much of the school's curriculum is internet-based, the lack of Wi-Fi connection disrupted the students' daily assignments. So just keep that in mind, what your kids might be doing, hopefully, only good things with the internet. But these two young gentlemen found a hole, and although what they did was very bad, it does open up our eyes to the fact that there's a lot of vulnerability. And any IT person, myself included, needs to keep a continual eye on security and network stability. We talk about that a lot in this show. Again, the first thing you have to look at is the stability, the security, the safety, the consistency of anything you do when it involves smart items, programs, hardware, and of course, any kind of a network. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Social media, it's a hot topic and a competitive one. Of course, Facebook is the king, the queen, the jack, the prince, the princess of social media. They're the biggest by far, and they continue to grow and prosper. We have LinkedIn, which has its niche, but is hardly a shell of what Facebook is. And we have Google Plus, which seemed like a good idea. Of course, Google, they're enormous, and most of the stuff they touch turns to gold, but Google Plus would be the exception. And as we speak, Google Plus is being disbanded. They've officially started the process of shutting down and deleting all consumer accounts on the Google Plus social network platform, bringing an end to the company's attempt to directly compete with Facebook and Twitter. A Google spokesperson said the shutdown is underway as of Tuesday morning. Google Plus is being phased out due to low usage and because it turned into something of a liability, security liability, for Google. The company has disclosed two significant data leaks that could have exposed information for tens of millions of Google Plus users to outside developers. The first vulnerability, which was kept secret for months, prompted Google to decide it was time to close Google Plus for good. And the second led to them accelerating those shutdown plans by 4 months. It will meet its end this month, April 2019. And again, it's being disbanded as I speak. Google said there's been no evidence that developers were aware of these bugs, security liabilities, or took advantage of them. Google has acknowledged that Google Plus failed to meet their expectations for user growth and mainstream pickup. Ben Smith, who works at Google, said, "While our engineering teams have put a lot of effort and dedication into building Google Plus for over the years, it has not achieved broad consumer or developer adoption and has seen limited user interaction with apps." He then revealed a pretty depressing statistic for where Google Plus stands today. 90% of Google Plus user sessions are less than 5 seconds. Compare that to people spending hours with Facebook. Quite sad. Again, most of what Google touches turns to gold. This turned into a dud. But it was a good try and further cements Facebook's place in the social media realm and secondarily Twitter, and I would say tertiarily? Well, third place I would put in LinkedIn, which does have a bit of a different purpose than Facebook and Twitter, but the broad-based general idea is about the same. Even if Google Plus never rose to anything that had a chance of challenging Facebook, their platform has been home to a small but loyal community of users throughout the years. I tried Google Plus, and again, I still have the account, but they're going to delete it. Never really found it to be too useful. In the early days of Google Plus, Google forced consumers to create an account on the social network to comment on the company's other services, for example, YouTube, which Google acquired many years ago. But that was not a very popular move. Google Plus even got tied to the process of creating a Gmail account. But being force-fed an unfamiliar social platform did not sit well with consumers. So Google did a lot of damage through its own decisions. Again, if they were trying to take on Facebook from the beginning, they didn't do a very good job. So, things happen, and Google has learned from its mistakes, and they will concentrate on being a search engine, being an email provider, business ads, and all the stuff that they do successfully have as part of their company. Of course, Alphabet being the umbrella company, which includes Google and subsidiaries. So once again, Mark Zuckerberg, sitting in his booster chair, is snickering that another one of his competitors has bitten the dust. But that's how it goes in the competitive, always changing world of information technology. Adam Lepp here, providing information on technology on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Experts over at Microsoft's Windows Defender security intelligence team recently reported their discovery of two new email-based phishing campaigns. Again, where the email doesn't come from where it says it comes from, in an attempt to hack into a system, steal a credit card number, or do something else that's naughty. One targets American Express users, while the other targets Netflix customers. So two very large bases of people. Both campaigns reportedly are very well crafted, featuring legitimate logos and even fill-in forms that closely mimic those on the respective company's own websites. So if you're like me, you have an American Express card, you get an email from American Express, be sure that it really is from them and that the form you're filling out is really an American Express form. And if it smells like a rat, it probably is. If you aren't sure, feel free to call American Express. I'm sure they're getting a lot of calls about this, but don't be afraid to join that list of people. They certainly are concerned about your security, and they're less than happy about this hacking attempt. And same thing with Netflix. Now, it's not clear if these campaigns are being orchestrated by the same group, but each was launched at about the same time. The Windows Defender intelligence team has advised all computer users to be especially vigilant in the coming weeks. Phishing attacks, as you can imagine, with computers getting faster and smarter, and many people finding it hard to resist the clicking that the crooks want you to do when they get these emails. People are becoming vulnerable. You see something, and maybe it looks like you won something in terms of a credit card. Maybe it says your credit line was increased, or they're going to waive an interest or fee or something else. And you kind of think, well, this is good. I might as well click. But again, think before you click. It's good advice anytime, but in today's world, it's obviously becoming more predominant. Statistically, over 1 in 5 people who received these phishes, again spelled phishes, believed that the messages were legitimate and clicked on the links, according to Microsoft's security experts. They also note that from last year, there's a 250% increase in these attacks. So this problem, which has been serious for a while, is getting worse, and people are becoming more vulnerable. So again, if you don't think that it's legitimate, you're not sure, you're not 100% sure it is legitimate, don't click on it. Don't be afraid to call the company who claims to have sent it. Don't be afraid to ask for a second opinion from a friend or family member, coworker, or a computer tech. More than happy to provide our assessment. So these recent attacks, again, targeting American Express and Netflix customers, both warned of account issues, a common tactic. American Express customers got a notice saying, "Notice concerning your card member account," which claims that cardholders need to go through a reauthentication process for security reasons. The message urges users to download and fill out an attached form. Based on reports, the form itself doesn't contain a virus, but rather asks for very personal information, like mother's maiden name, birth date, PIN for the card, even first elementary school. Kind of a dead giveaway, because American Express has a lot of that information anyway. The Netflix phishing attack warns users that their, quote, account is on hold because of a problem with their last payment. And like with the spoofed American Express emails, it features the actual Netflix logo. But that logo is easily copied and pasted from thousands of places. That doesn't really show that it's authentic. That's what I wanted to say. A link directs users to a billing information form that requests full credit card numbers, including PIN, as well as social security numbers and other personal details. What is notable about these respective emails and forms is how convincing they appear, including correct grammar and spelling. Many phishing emails come from foreign countries where people don't have good English skills, and the bad English is a dead giveaway, but not in this case. And some of these phishers are getting smarter, which means they're much more dangerous. So this, the more authentic look of these phishing emails from American Express and Netflix are an indication that the criminals responsible took the time to copy, edit the content to eliminate the usual typographical errors that are a dead giveaway. About the only notable giveaway, according to the experts, with this American Express phishing email is that it features capital letters following commas, something some people may not immediately recognize as a grammatical error. Now, phishing scams tend to be rather low-tech, and that's why so many criminals use them, as they're not too difficult and the cost is very minimal. Sending out an email is free. It's more of a clerical cost and kind of some research to see how to make it more successful. Phishing emails have been around quite a while. They first showed up, remember these Usenet newsgroups, which have been replaced by Facebook groups and other more modern methods. They were wonderful, though, back in the 90s and then after the turn of the millennium. So up to 25 years ago, phishing emails first came into play. Even with constant reminders from companies and security experts not to trust such emails, people still become victims. And again, part of it is that the phishing emails are more sophisticated, like this one from American Express. Colin Little is a threat analyst at Centripetal Networks. He said, "The average consumer is not trained to think of emails in terms of the potential threat that they may contain, unless they've been similarly compromised before." He said Microsoft is demonstrating that they are continually trying to develop ways to stop these threats. He said also worth noting is not only the scale of the attacks, but also the context of the attack, taking place during an overall increase in the phishing threat landscape. Francis Dinha is CEO of OpenVPN, and he said, "We continue to see these types of attacks because they're effective. Plus, these attacks target people over technology. That is, a hacker doesn't have to be a tech wizard to carry it out. You just need to be able to trick the reader into clicking on a link or filling out a form. It takes very little tech expertise to do that," according to Mr. Dinha from OpenVPN, "because it's more of a personal con than a technical assault. People have been trying to trick each other out of resources since humanity began. We just have modern tools to do so more effectively now." I would definitely agree. Just a more high-tech take on people trying to trick other people into getting their money, credit card information, and other things that they have no business seeing. At the present time, it's not clear if the attack was sent to actual known customers of American Express and Netflix, or a much wider net was cast. Jim Pertilo is a professor in the Computer Science Department at the University of Maryland. He said, "Potentially, we'll never know for sure, but that would tell us whether the attackers are using information from some prior breach to focus the effort. Sending a fake Netflix notice of account suspension to people who are not Netflix customers is probably not very productive. On the other hand, he said, so many people are Netflix customers that an attacker has statistics on his or her side, and a random mail blast to a zillion collected names will score hits. Also, the attackers have economics on their side. As I alluded to earlier, sending a malicious mail blast is basically free. Compare that to sending out junk mail, 50 cents for a stamp, the paper, the time to go to the post office or the mailbox and mail the items. This case, sending the emails doesn't cost anything. Phishing is a low overhead business that profits with the very hapless user, with the very first hapless user to respond. And that's from Professor Jim Pertilo, a computer science professor, so he knows what he's talking about in Maryland. He said phishing, if the volume of phishing attempts has gone up in the last year, then that tells us it is also mostly free of legal costs. Officials just aren't keeping up. The best defense against phishing attacks is obviously awareness. But this is also one of those rare situations where literally doing nothing is the best course. Don't open the email. Don't respond. Just ignore it. Mr. Dinha from OpenVPN said, education has to be the number one strategy for users across the board. Consumers need to educate themselves, and companies need to educate their workforce and stakeholders. All too often, these attacks work because users haven't thought to question what they're reading. But education on cybersecurity risks teaches us to stop and question. If you've never heard of someone experiencing the consequences of a phishing attack, then you might assume it's less likely to happen to you or not that dangerous. But the more educated you are on what exactly can happen and how, then the more likely you are to be on alert for attacks like this. This education has to go beyond the obligatory warning to consumers. It has to be an in-depth explanation of and understanding around the cybersecurity risks we are facing. Phishing scams, according to the experts, are effective for the criminal groups because, unlike other attacks, they don't require very sophisticated skills. Now, writing viruses can be simple or can be very complex. Denial of service attacks, that stuff is often done by people with outstanding computer skills. People who should be using those skills to help people, but instead are doing it for criminal reasons. But phishing is very easy. And that's, again, and the cost is zero to very minimal. And that's why it's so attractive for many dishonest people. Apart from crafting an official-looking email and spoofed website, you don't really need any other technical expertise. In fact, it probably isn't apt to describe the perpetrators as cyber criminals or hackers, as they are more like con artists. And I would agree. Hackers often are very smart, and as I said, they use their skills not to help people, not to make money from providing support, doing programming, network monitoring. Instead, they break into systems, they cost people money, cost companies money, sometimes cause a business to be shut down, steal information, get rich, or at least make a profit from criminal means. But with a phishing scam, it's simple. So we don't want to classify these people in the same category as the traditional cyber criminal or hacker. Phishing scams work. People are vulnerable. And you see the carrot and you jump for it. That's what I'm saying. If it smells like a rat instead of something that's obviously legitimate, then it probably is. And don't be afraid to ask for advice or call the company that says that is claiming to be sending it. Again, American Express, I'm sure they're getting thousands and thousands of calls about this very same issue. Don't be embarrassed to ask. They appreciate that you're concerned about your account relationship with them. Phishing scams work because people are fooled into supplying information, not because, like in the case of hacking, someone broke into a system. And that's why these attacks are unlikely to go away. Even if most people delete the email from a phishing campaign, a few individuals will believe it. If one person out of 1,000 clicks, then the fisher, the scam artist, has accomplished his or her goal. Again, because of the low cost of this scam from the scammer's perspective. Joe O'Reilly, a cybersecurity expert, said, "Unfortunately, we will continue to see these types of phishing attacks on consumers as long as they continue to fall for them. So yes, don't take the bait. It's not going to stop, folks, if even one person takes the bait. One click out of 1,000, out of 10,000 phishing emails, and the scammer has accomplished his or her goal." Joe O'Reilly, again, an expert, she's from bestvpn.com. She said, "These types of attacks are a numbers game. Even if only a handful of those targeted respond, then the hackers will have seen their efforts pay off. The best way for consumers to protect themselves from phishing is to ensure that they never enter personal or financial details via a link contained within an email, even one that looks official. Instead, they should always open a new browser window in order to sign into any online account, whether it's Netflix, Amex, or any other service, before inputting their password or any other personal information. The good news is that security experts are closely monitoring the situation and bringing greater awareness to phishing efforts. The latest story shows us that Microsoft's cloud protections are attempting to do more and more to proactively protect the accounts of their users from receiving these phishing emails. However, it is in the nature of cybersecurity that the more innovative we are at detecting threats, the more innovative and evasive the bad guys will be. For example, like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. So consumers get smarter, more cautious, and that can also mean that the criminals get more clever. So again, just be careful out there. The internet can be wonderful, but it can also be dangerous. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with tech advice for you on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. So what is Apple up to, you might ask? The latest and greatest from those fine people in Cupertino, California, where their CEO is, his name is Tim Cook, not Tim Apple, as Donald Trump called him. But, you know, Donald Trump's guffaws are just part of the fun. And something tells me, I'm sure Donald or one of his family members is a Apple product user anyway. And certainly he's a frequent tweeter. Well, what's going on with Apple? After I digress, but, you know, jovial comment, be it about a politician or whomever, just adds to the fun. But yes, Tim Cook, not Tim Apple, is the main person over there at Apple in Cupertino, California. Earlier in March, they announced a new iPad, 10.5 inches, and a refresh of the iPad Mini, the 10.5-inch iPad Air, which will sell for $499 or $629 with cellular service. Pretty good device. Wi-Fi support, even if you don't get the LTE support. 64 gigabytes of solid-state storage. Has the latest mobile processor, that's kind of hard to say. The A12 Bionic chip, that's easier to say. And supports Apple Pencil and the company's smart keyboard. Tim Bajarin, Tim must be a common name for people associated with this product. Well, he's not from Apple. He's from Creative Strategies there in Campbell, California. He said the Bionic A12 is a cut above the processors used in all other tablets on the market. The 7.9-inch iPad Mini, which will sell at a base price of $399 with Wi-Fi, $529 with cellular, also has the A12 chip, as well as Apple Pencil support. Kind of a cool-looking device. The A12 chip boosts overall performance of the new Air by 70%, according to Apple, and doubles graphic performance. The screen, 20% bigger with 500,000 more pixels, has been upgraded to a better Retina display with True Tone technology. True Tone dynamically adjusts the screen's white balance based on the light around it, so it's easier to view in all conditions. Sounds like a pretty fancy-dancy machine and not too much in the price department. The Mini also benefits from the new A12 chip, which delivers 3 times the performance of its predecessor and 9 times faster graphics. Its Retina display is 25% brighter than previous models and has the highest pixel density of any iPad. Both units have an 8-megapixel rear camera, 7-megapixel front camera. The rear camera does all kinds of fancy stuff: autofocus, panoramas, HDR for stills, exposure control, burst mode, and a partridge in a pear tree. Possibly. Well, maybe not, but a lot of great features. Timer shots, auto image stabilization, good stuff. The front camera has many features as the rear camera, including the exposure control, burst, and timer modes. The Air and the new Mini are available immediately for online ordering, and they're coming to stores very soon. Kind of depends upon, of course, where you live. Gold, silver, and space gray are the colors available. Phil Schiller, Apple's senior VP of worldwide marketing, said, "Today the iPad family takes 2 big leaps forward with an all-new 10.5-inch iPad Air that brings high-end sound, high-end size, features and performance at a breakthrough price, and a major upgrade to the 7.9-inch iPad Mini, which also brings Apple Pencil, Retina display, and the A12 Bionic chip to the many customers that like its compact size." David McQueen is from ABI Research, and they're in Oyster Bay, New York. They're a technology advisory company. He said the new iPad Air is an uptick in technology over previous models. Larger screen, better processor, lighter weight, all while nudging up the processing power to that of the iPad Pro, but at a markedly cheaper price than the Pro. It has also adopted technology like the Smart Keyboard and Apple Pencil, which was initially just the preserve of the iPad Pro. The 10.5-inch Air seems to be a replacement for the 10.5-inch iPad Pro, which has been discontinued. Paul Gagnon from IHS Market, a research analysis and advisory firm in London, said, "It looks like a refresh of that previous generation of iPad Pro, without including all the bells and whistles on the latest version. The focus is to hit the $500 price point." You know, these Apple products, they're cool, but notoriously kind of difficult in the wallet department. Now, the 2018 iPad Pro is meant to be a notebook PC replacement, so the typical configuration is well over $1,000. He said this is Apple's way of maintaining some volume at a mid-range price point, especially to compete with some of the cheaper offerings that have come from Samsung and others. Kevin Kruel, we quote him often, he's in San Jose, he is an analyst at Tyrios Research, said, "Apple appears to be focusing the iPad on creative work, like note-taking and sketching. The iPad Mini could be a replacement for a reporter's notepad, now that there's pencil support. So you don't need to bring the old-fashioned pencil and paper, just take your writing utensil that's designed for this iPad Mini and write on it." Pretty cool. Of course, it does a lot of other things, but that's one of the many useful and, I would say, old-fashioned features that this device provides. He said it does seem that these products will undercut the demand for the iPad Pro, especially the 11-inch version. Although the rationale behind the Air refresh seemed apparent, the upgrade of the Mini puzzled some analysts. Mr. Gagnon, we quoted him earlier, said, "I don't get the point of it. At $400 for an 8-inch tablet, it is much more expensive than the typical small tablet, which is usually closer to $100 or $200. There's some overlap with larger smartphones that have been introduced. So we've seen a drop-off in shipment volumes of tablets with those smaller screen sizes in the last year or so. Worldwide shipments of tablets in the 7 to 9-inch category dropped from 84 million units in 2017 to fewer than 60 million in 2018. The same is true for the tablet market, generally, with worldwide shipments going from 176 million units in 2017 to 140 million in 2018. It's a declining category, but most of that decline is coming from the smaller screen sizes, which are being cannibalized by the much larger smartphones. So yeah, why bother getting a tablet when you can just do it with your phone? And it already has the LTE service and, of course, Wi-Fi built in. It's a good point. Do you need to get both devices? Well, the manufacturers, of course, would like you to. Lauren Guenvor, that's a good name. I think it's pronounced Lauren Guenvor, a senior research analyst at IDC, said, "The Mini refresh also seemed puzzling. I heard rumors of the launch of a new iPad Mini for many months before today. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out why they would bring back a small screen tablet when they have a smartphone with a screen that approaches the same size as the iPad Mini. That said, her experience suggests that there may be some potential for the new Mini. She said, I do a lot of traveling for work, and I do consistently see the iPad Mini being the tablet that most teenagers and children have for media consumption. The Mini seems to be for either technology laggards or for those who need a device purely for consuming media. Although the tablet market is generally in decline, Apple has been able to buck the trend for the most part. It may continue to do so with its latest iPads." And she said, "The second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter is going to look pretty good for Apple tablets, but I don't know how much growth they have left in the iPad after that point." So Apple trying to get renewed interest in the iPad, that it isn't necessarily going to be overlapping with your phone. People spending a few $100 to buy the latest and greatest, the Mini or the Air. And, you know, Apple, they're pretty creative. I'm sure they'll find a way to get this to be a popular product. So, again, we'll keep an eye on this, as we do here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with my twice-weekly radio program here on WWGH, WWGH1071.com. We call it the Adam the Computer Guy radio program. If you'd ever like to provide a suggested topic, or you have a comment, question, complaint about something I've talked about, hey, send me an email on our private email server, of course, adam@WWGH1071.com. What are the smart folks over at Mozilla doing? People behind the Firefox web browser. They recently announced Firefox Send, a free encrypted file sharing service that works on any browser, kind of like Dropbox and other file sharing services. To share a file, you simply visit the Send site and drag your file to a box on the web page. Unregistered users can upload up to 1 gigabyte in files, while registered users up to 2.5 gigabytes. After uploading the files, you choose an expiration time for the link used to share them. Expirations can be set for the number of downloads, 1 to 5, 50 or 100, or in increments of time, 5 minutes to 1 hour, 1 day or 7 days. You can also provide a password protection for the link. You then click the upload button, and you're given a URL. The URL contains a link to the file and a key for decrypting it. The person receiving the file can click on it to download the file. He or she would then be able to decrypt it, that is, remove that extra security, and store it on a computer or a mobile phone when the Send app is available for Android. Till then, just on your on the good old-fashioned computer. Now, this system, this Firefox file-sharing protocol with a lot of security built in, is currently in beta. Nick Gwynn, Mozilla's VP of Product Strategy, said there are no hoops for recipients to jump through. They just receive a link to click and download the file, and they don't need to have a Firefox account to access the file, versus services like Dropbox that are a bit more invasive. This also seems more secure and easier to use, so I think it will definitely be successful. Mr. Gwynn, again, a VP over at Mozilla, said the sharing experience is seamless for both parties and as quick as sending an email. Now, obviously, this new service, it's called Send, a file sharing system from Mozilla, the creators of Firefox and the email program Thunderbird, has a number of uses for consumers. Their VP, again, Nick Gwynn, said, imagine the last time you moved into a new apartment or purchased a home and had to share financial information like your credit card, your credit report over the web. In situations like this, you may want to offer the recipient one-time or limited access to those files. With Send, you can feel safe that your personal information does not live somewhere in the cloud indefinitely. Other services for sharing files, we mentioned Dropbox, of course, Google Drive and Microsoft OneDrive are obviously available and well known, but they don't have some of the great features of Send. Ross Rubin, we quote him often, he's from Reticle Research in New York City, said they're geared toward more permanent file storage. They're trying to get you to pay for more permanent storage. That's how they make money. So they don't have much interest in helping you effectively manage your space. So this new Send protocol from Mozilla would seem to have many advantages. So what else is good about this new service called Send? It works inside any browser. According to Tanner Johnson from IHS Market in London, makes things easier to organize and send. But it doesn't mean that consumers will be rushing to share their files securely. He said, unfortunately, we live in a very complacent society security-wise, so a lot of these services, unless they're very user-friendly and require little input and set up from the user, will not be adopted quickly. You'd be surprised how many people refuse to enact two-factor authentication on their devices because setting up the account and configuration is just too taxing. So they throw their hands in the air and just give up. One drawback to Send is that when recipients have an unencrypted copy of a file, they can do anything with it. You need to trust the individual you're sending the information to. If you have something you want to conceal or keep private, you have to trust that person will not turn around and share it with someone else. Now, Send is designed to foil a man-in-the-middle attack in which an unauthorized person snatches a message from a sender before it reaches a recipient. With Send, even if a message is intercepted, it's illegible because it's encrypted. While secure file sharing has not gained wide consumer acceptance, demand for it has been growing. As more stories appear about the mismanagement of data, visibility will grow, which will drive adoption. Send will attract security-minded individuals as well as those concerned with basic digital security hygiene. Phil Zimmerman, he created the PGP, which stands for Pretty Good Privacy, a well-known encryption method which has been around a long time. He is a professor in the Netherlands at Delft University of Technology. Obviously, what he has to say will be important. He said it's an interesting product. it's certainly better than a service that uploads files without encryption, or uploads encrypted files with the key to decrypt them. Although Mozilla's browser fortunes have been declining, Send is an example of a strategy to remain relevant. Like with Apple, a way to boost interest in their products. At Mozilla, we are always committed to people's security and privacy. That's from, again, Nick Wynn, one of their VPs. He said, we're continuously looking for new ways to fulfill that promise, whether it's through the browser, apps, or services. So, some good stuff coming from Mozilla, and earlier talking about the new fancy-dancy and not overly expensive iPads from Apple. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place with great programming for you every single day. This show is about technology, trendy technology topics, and oftentimes how politics and technology tend to go hand in hand more every day. The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 FM in Marion and online at WWGH1071.com.